I'm joining the podcast from the band Bride, and among a lot of other projects going on right now, but I have lead singer Del Thompson. Del, thank you so much for joining the podcast. It's a pleasure.
Thanks. Glad to be invited. I saw that my brother has been on here. I think John Warren has been on here. And
yep.
So I hope to upstage both of those interviews.
That's what we're going for. Your stories have to be, you have to outtop all of them. I had Jerry on also, so I've had two of the other guys.
Oh, boring.
Well, you know, us drummers got to stick together, so I gave them the benefit of the doubt.
Well, the only way to get the full Bride story is to interview all of us individually, then try to figure out who actually has the best memory, because I think a lot of it we are embellished and we see things differently than the other band members did. So,
yeah. Well, it's funny because the first time I ever technically met you, you guys were playing a place in Marietta, Georgia. It was called The Strand.
Oh, and yeah, I remember The Strand.
And it was good, like an old theater. And I think Scarecrow just came out, and you were up there after the concert talking to people. And I'm probably 14 at the time. You know, I'm trying to think of what clever thing can I say to Del Thompson. And I go up there. I'm like, hey, my grandparents have a lake house on Kentucky Lake. And you said, I don't know if it's your cousin or someone. And you're like, yeah, my cousin's in the state penitentiary there. I'm like, okay.
Oh, yeah, that was probably true. I've had some neighbors and some cousins up there in the old Eddyville and LaGrange areas. And, yeah,
that was my great conversation piece with you at that point in my life. So,
it sounded like I answered about as unthinkingly as I could. But anyway, that's me for you.
But let's get into some stuff here. And you know, we'll get into it later, but I know kind of the hot topic sometimes can be the whole Facebook social media thing, and people, it can be good and it can be bad also, but we'll get into that in a little bit if you don't mind. But I kind of want to delve back, and I'm sure you've been asked this 100 times, but you know, your early influences growing up where you grew up, what were those influences? I know you've taken bluegrass, you've been influenced by and done stuff with that, but where does rock and roll kind of come into that?
Troy and I both, you know, we've always played music, and we grew up in church, you know, playing church music. And my family was very musical. All the uncles would get together and cousins, and they would play and bring their banjos and mandolins and flat top guitars. And I remember the first time my cousin Roger brought in a electric bass. Everybody kind of looked at it like, what is this? What are you, you're all plugged in. We just grew up on church music. We played music growing up. I had a little four-piece band with my cousins called the Hillview Lads. We toured around doing churches in the community and stuff for a while. And I think I was leaned more into rock and roll at first and Troy was being trained classically as a classical violinist at the time, and I was really into a local band called Asher. Mm-hmm. And Asher had this brilliant guitar player named Billy Sutherland, and Troy probably mentioned Billy Sutherland to you, but if it wasn't for Billy Sutherland, I wouldn't be in the position I'm in today. He was very influential on me, and he was one of the greatest guitarists, you know, I've ever seen. He was just creative, and he was doing things that I just see people learning how to do today, and he was doing it back, you know, 70s and 80s. But Billy needed a bass player, and I didn't know how to play bass. I'd only played acoustic guitar, so I went and bought a bass guitar, and I bought an amp, and I went to audition for him. And he says, "You don't know how to play, do you?" And I'm like, "Nope." He said, you know, you're at an audition and you don't know how to play it. I said, no, I said, I thought maybe you'd show me. And he did. And so we formed a band called Warrior, and I stayed with them for about a year. And then Troy and I started playing more and more. And I had learned how to play the bass by then somewhat. And then, I don't know. It's all a bit of a fog, but we just sort of switched back and forth, and I bought some sort of distortion box for my acoustic guitar, And we were playing wherever they'd have us play and all that stuff. And I mean, next thing you know, I mean, we have a band called Matrix, a three-piece band that, you know, we were kind of patterning it a bit after the sounds of like U2 and the Cars, the Police, bands like that, even though in the back of our minds we thought we were Rush. From there we ended up with a record deal, and then Bride came about. But as far as the details of any of that, unless I see it in a photograph, I probably can't remember it.
What I guess I could ask is, was there anybody in particular that influenced you musically, vocally, I should say, that you were trying to sometime, maybe, or maybe just you were always your own thing, which is a good thing because you're, in my opinion, one of the greatest singers out there in rock. But when did you feel comfortable, or was there anybody influencing you, or did you just do your own thing and stick with it?
Before I ever actually was playing music out, I did what a lot of guys and girls do, that, you know, you just pick up a hairbrush and sing along with Elvis or, you know, whoever was big in the day that I knew their songs. I mean, I didn't grow up on what I do now. It was like Kenny Rogers and Elvis, John Denver,
What was the hardest stuff you listened to? Because I mean, Matrix would be, or in early Bry was pretty heavy.
The heaviest stuff in the beginning was Kansas. Somehow I came across Kansas. So it could have been because I was working at a Christian bookstore and somebody mentioned Kansas. They thought might be a Christian band because of the mm-hmm. lyrics or whatever. So I got some Kansas, and then I tried to sing like Steve Walsh, and that was impossible. So then next thing you know, I'm looking into Boston, and I'm looking into Journey, and I'm looking into all these bands, only to realize I can't sing like those guys. But I didn't have a natural rasp at the time either. I just couldn't hit the notes. And so I ended up getting an AC/DC album came out to that a little bit late. And I sang along with Brian Johnson, the best I could. And then what really sparked it was I tried out for a band called Witness in Louisville, and they said, you're not going to fit. You can't sing this type of music. I'm like, okay. So then I heard Kerry Livgren's Seeds of Change album. Kerry Livgren, someone I've not had the chance to meet, which I've always wanted to meet, because he pretty much with that album set me on a new course of where Bride is today. He's somewhat guarded. And even people that I know that he knows, they refuse to introduce me to him for some reason. I guess they're afraid I might just sing on their album and take their spot, is the way I look at it. But maybe not. But anyway, when I heard Ronnie James Dio sing, I actually prayed and I said, God, if you really want me to do this, because I feel a calling on my heart to do rock and roll music, you've got to make me sound like this guy. This is the guy. This is the vocal. And I've never sounded like Dio, but at the same time, I've always emulated some of his techniques and stuff, and tried to come across as with the same quality that he has always done. You know, he was sort of a flawless singer, but I'm not flawless, but he certainly was and ranks above the top enchilada, the metal vocalist of all time. So
I think I brought that up with Troy, and I asked him if Ronnie was an influence for you, and he didn't seem to think so, or he kind of downplayed it maybe, but I don't know why, just maybe just this recently, but I was listening to your older stuff, and I'm like, there's a real Dio vibe there I've never noticed for some reason. It just hit me.
Well,
I asked him about that.
The whole Guns N' Roses thing that we got thrown into was completely by chance, because I wasn't studying Axl Rose as a singer when we were doing those albums where people claimed that I sounded like Axl Rose. I was looking heavy at Steven Tyler, and I was looking heavy at Andrew Wood, which ranked up as one of my top singers from Mother Love Bone. Axl was definitely somebody I had heard, because you know we covered Welcome to the Jungle, so we could actually play a club one time. But as far as Axl being one of my influences, he certainly wasn't. It just so happened that we're both Midwestern boys and we grew up
You
around
have a
pigs
similar
and
sound.
corn. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I took it a bit hard at first. People said I sound like Axl. And then I said, well, maybe Axl sounds like me. And then I said, well, they sell a lot of albums. I don't mind sounding like somebody that sells 20 million albums. So, yeah, that's cool.
Exactly.
So I kind of took it like that at that point. I have met Axl,
Oh, really?
and yeah, I've had the good fortune outside of Brad to do a lot of traveling in different circles, and lived in LA for a while, lived in different areas, different times, you know.
Well, how was that meeting, Axel? How did that come about?
We just met. We met at a place out there where a friend of mine took me, and we it's kind of like he knew him, and we just talked and stuff, you know. It's, I mean, you meet a lot of people when you're out. He won't have any memory of it, you know, but you know, I did, because he was quite huge at the time I met him and
Right.
stuff. But yeah, I mean, you know, pleasant enough. He didn't blow me off or nothing, so.
Well, and going back, and I mean, obviously, you mentioned that you and your brother start playing, you and Troy, and then you guys were doing the Matrix thing, and then become Bride, and Pure Metal is who you guys signed with at first, correct? That's
Yeah, pure
before they
metal.
got bought out by Star Song. But when did you and Troy kind of click and realize that working together was a good idea and that you guys enjoyed it?
Well, I guess when we started writing songs together, because we always played together, like Southern gospel songs and stuff. But until we started writing songs together, and then we wrote some tunes, and that was way back. I mean, years and years ago, even before Matrix, we started writing together, and we had a lot of quirky songs. I mean, just, I don't know what direction we were going. It was either going to be Devo or something, I don't know, but we ended up having to reevaluate at some point, I remember, because we didn't know anything about it. We just knew we were supposed to be doing it, and we liked rock music at that point, because we had not really been exposed to it. You know, for years I didn't listen to any secular rock music at all, so I really missed out on developing as a seasoned veteran, so to speak, you know. Bands like Black Sabbath and stuff like that, you know, I had refused to listen to. Judas Priest, wouldn't listen to them or nothing. Iron Maiden, you know, everybody was demonized. The church just demonized anybody and everybody, you know, and sort of ruined it for a lot of us. I mean, we had a great upbringing. We weren't going to fall into Satan worship.
Yeah, just
We
'cause it's
just
Iron
see,
Man.
yeah, we just wanted to, you know, we wanted to be part of the art of it. You know, these guys have a talent from God, and they're playing for whatever reasons, mainly money, not to worship the devil. I mean, how many of those bands actually worship the devil?
Yeah,
Zero,
no.
except for Slayer, maybe, and that's still doubtful when you hear whatchamacallit talk.
Yeah.
That'd
I
be
mean, they're
more of,
supposedly Catholic. I mean,
yeah, I'm more
but
afraid of Sam Smith now than I am
oh
Slayer.
gosh.
So.
Yeah, that's funny. I was gonna say, were you guys playing a lot of shows in the in that area? What area were you around, Louisville, or is that where you kind of grew up, or?
We were playing Louisville and Southern Indiana, and then there was a guy that used to be our baseball coach, and he had a couple of places that he had opened up, that we played some honky tonk bars, and you know, we would play wherever, because the churches weren't was not interested in us playing. You know, we'd play a church one time, and that was it. That, you know, it was too much for them.
And you were
And
playing bass in the early days too, you
yeah,
said. So
it
that, but
didn't
th
take me
that, it,
long to get rid of the bass, though.
yeah, I was going to ask. I mean, that probably freed you up a lot too to do. I mean, you did a lot of crazy stuff on the stage back in the day,
Well, I played
climbing
bass
climb.
up until Show No Mercy, pretty much. Troy
Okay.
would play the bass on the Matrix. Most of the Matrix stuff, it was Troy playing bass, because he was much more proficient. But live, Troy was playing the guitar, and then I was going through the motions of being a bass player. You know, my big influence was Rudy Sarzo, and
Yeah.
so he did a lot of the playing over the top of the neck and all the stuff.
Right.
So, you know, I played all the simple stuff on Top of the Neck. It made me look like I really knew what I was doing. But I honestly didn't have a clue. You know, Troy had to actually sit down and show me note by note everything. I just didn't pick it up and play it. I mean, if it was left up to me, I probably couldn't have found the chord we were playing in. So,
how soon do you guys sign with Pure Metal? And why do you guys change the band name to Bride from Matrix?
Troy said there was a jazz band he found, Camelot Music or something, called Matrix, and we didn't want any hassle with that. So I said, well, let's just call the band Bride, like the Bride of Christ. You know, let's do that. I said that would solve all of our problems. There's not another bride out there, except now my black veiled brides or something.
Right.
Every time you look up brides, you see those guys. Yeah, I mean, so we changed the name to Bride during the signing of the contract. The label signed Matrix, but we ended up as Bride. And that was after they saw us open for the Daniel Band in Pottstown, Pennsylvania.
Was Dorn part of that? Was he promoting shows and helped get you guys?
Dorn brought us up there. I think he saw it as an opportunity for us. We haven't had much dealings with Dorn since then, so I don't know what's going on there, but we played one show for Dorn, got signed, and that was it. Never really heard from him again.
Okay.
I see him around, you know, on Facebook.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're talking close to 40 years ago or something like that. So, I mean, I don't know if he just got involved with other styles of music or other bands he invested in, but he didn't invest in Bride after that at all.
Okay. Yeah, I know. I've read up on that. I heard that story before about him setting up that show, at least. But
yeah, I'm thankful that he did. I mean, it got us recognized, you know. So it's plus I got to play at the Daniel Band. They were one of my favorites at the time. So,
and I wanted to. I don't know if this is correct or not, but I read this, and it's kind of crazy. If it's true, it is. But when you guys signed and did that first album, that you thought it had to actually be out in a month or some crazy story like that. So you guys rushed the recording for Show No Mercy and did it as quickly as possible. Is that actually true?
No, we did it as quickly as we could because the record company gave us a certain amount of money, which I don't remember exactly. If I'm not mistaken, and this is probably true, the album cost $1,750 to make. I believe that Pure Metal charged us $30,000 or some ridiculous amount like that on paper so that we would never pay it back. Pure Metal Records was a very diabolical record company that should never have been labeled as Christian.
Okay.
The CEO of that, Ray Nenow, went off to join some cult. And Gavin Morkel went on to start a swingers club in Nashville, which is still going today from my understanding.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's no love lost there. They ripped us off big time, you know, and eventually we realized we're not going to make anything here. And those guys are making any money that's to be made. That's when you actually could sell albums. You know, you could sell 20,000-30,000 CDs or records or whatever, you know, it's. For bands like Bride today, you know, our numbers aren't like that, you know. So
how did you guys wind up with them? I mean, was there any other labels trying to sign you at all?
No, we weren't even looking to get signed. So we just signed the deal. Then after that, we tried to get other labels interested in us. You know, I can't remember the names of the heavier labels at the time. But even some of the Christian labels, you know, Tooth and Nail didn't want anything to do with us. They were in their own thing. So I don't know what they were into. Maybe we were too metal for them. I'm not for sure. But we approached them. We approached a ton of people. I mean, it got turned down by everybody. And then Star Song, when they bought Pure Metal, they bought whatever we had already done, and then thought, well, let's just do a couple songs. We can make more money on Bride and never have to see them again. But then those songs, Everybody Knows My Name and Same Old Sinner, went to number one on the rock and metal charts for weeks. I mean, like, Everybody Knows My Name was number one for like 12 weeks or some crazy thing in a row. And then they said, well, you know, these guys, obviously people like them. So then they signed us to a three-record deal, which they tried to get another album out of us in the end, bit of a dirty deal, which we caught, thank goodness. And then that's when we went full on with John and Dino.
Okay.
That point.
And going back with those first three albums were kind of more, they were definitely heavier. And then, like you said, I'm kind of curious, what is going through your mind, how things are going when Pure Metal is bought out? You guys do change the style with those two songs in a way. I mean, where are you at mentally of what are we going to do with this band? Where's it going?
Our labels changed. Because we still didn't know which style we were supposed to be doing. We knew Steve Osborne was the metal factor in the band. And Steve was dedicated to a lot of the club stuff because he was trying to make extra money, on the side so that he could support himself. And without Steve, we weren't really metal. We were hard rock. And so we said, well, what should we do? And Troy said, well, I'll try to write more groove licks, something with more groove to it. And he was listening, I think, a little bit to Jimmy Page, probably a little bit Aerosmith stuff, trying to figure out, how we can really play to a groove and not just heavy, fast, thrashy stuff. And when he wrote Everybody Knows My Name, I knew that was a cool song. And then when we did Same Old Center, I was like, oh, wow, people think that we're ex-center when we do this one. It sounds like an AC/DC song, So I said, these are good songs.
And those wound up being on, what was it, End of Age? Was that the compilation?
Everybody Knows My Name was on Kinetic Faith. And then they both may have been on that compilation. But that's the only place Same Old Center ever showed up. But we had to do something because we weren't playing quality shows. It wasn't like that nobody was knocking our door down, even though I was on the phone. I was sending out letters. Back then there was no Facebook, so I had to sit down and write letters and send to people trying to get us in different festivals.
Did you not have a manager or anything like that?
Brad has never had a manager, ever.
Okay.
Nobody wanted to take us on.
Why do you think that is?
Probably me. I'm too opinionated I'm not as much anymore. I've mellowed a lot. I mean, I'm at least 60 years old this year. Back then, I was really caught up in my own world. So I couldn't see past, my resolve on anything. So it was like, I had to, I had to learn the ropes the hard way.
Did that affect your relationship with any guys in the band? Do you think?
Oh yeah, I'm sure it was, but nobody wanted to say anything to me at the time. I mean, word got back to me later, I was a bit of a jerk. I lifted a lot of weights and I did a lot of boxing and I didn't take anything off anybody. And my word was in stone and that's the way it was. And that sort of attitude, I'll knock you down if you don't, that type of attitude severed a lot of good relationships or made people that wanted to be friends with me standoffish. But I'm pretty much safe where I'm at now in New Zealand. I can't really offend too many people except on Facebook.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in a minute, but, I was going to go back, but you're talking about trying to get shows and everything. I mean, I feel like, does that take a big change when Kinetic comes out?
And it did.
That because, really hits.
Well, Troy and I, we got Songwriters of the Year from CSAC. We had number one songs. We had a legitimate status at that point because now other bands that came onto the scene, the Guardians or whatever and Deliverance and Sacred Warriors and all that were coming on and all that. And so the genre was catching fire a bit, So now the powers that be had to look at it and say, okay, rock and metal, we need to concentrate on this. We've been concentrating on Twyla Paris and Amy Grants and, whoever the rest of them were. And, they then decided to put a little bit of money into into bands like us. And we were promised a lot with Star Song that they didn't deliver as well. You know, people think, you know, we all probably made a lot of money and that, you know, we were touring in big buses and just that whole facade. But none of that was true. Yeah. We were promised a lot only to find out some of the funds that we were supposed to get for our promotion actually went to contemporary artists. And we had one guy, and I won't call him out but by name, but he told us that Brad was the flagship of Star Song. And we were the flagship. It wasn't a month later, we couldn't even get him on the telephone. I don't know what happened, but.
Would his name be Dez?
No, it wasn't Dez.
How was your relationship with Dez? Was he running Star Song or?
No, Dez was A&R. Doing? He was the guy that they went to because of his affiliation with Prince,
mm-hmm.
and you know, his know-how and stuff. And he was quite good at what he did and everything. We never really butted heads much with Dez. Dez saw in us what the record company couldn't see. And the reason that they ended up really signing us, other than those two songs, is they come to see us play at the Toy Tiger in Louisville, Kentucky, which was kind of a showcase club. And that particular night, we let it all hang out because we knew that they were there. This was the make you or break you. Well, Dez brought with him Mike Kyle, who had been, I think, the road manager or something of Imperials. So, needless to say, I don't think Mike was ready for what he saw because we
not
set
coming
the
from
drum,
the Imperials.
Yeah, this was back, you know, when we first got signed to them back late 80s, early 90s. We set the drum kit on fire. We smashed stuff. Wow. We just went crazy. And Dez said, "That's a rock and roll band. We need a real rock band. We don't want, you know, somebody that, you know, was playing in the choir one week and touring the next. We want a band that's out there, you know, full real rock, you know, we can hang our hat on." And so he saw that in us where I don't think anybody else in the label saw it.
Was Jerry and Rick already part of the band at that point?
During that particular time, we had a drummer for a short period of time named Sean Mullins, and he went on to be in Stomp in New York. He's since passed, but Jerry came on right. Did he come on right after? I think he came on. I can't remember. I can't mm-hmm. remember when Jerry came on. Kinetic Faith, I thought, but
yeah, he was there with Kinetic, from what I
understand. Who played on? I'm asking you. Who played on Scarecrow? I can't remember.
It was Jerry.
Jerry. Okay, so Jerry must have been with us, and then us. Then come okay. back. Jerry was in and out of the band a couple of times for that. I think he was obligated to playing some club band or something. I cannot remember, to be honest with you. I could be getting that mixed up with something completely different. But
I mean, you definitely have gone through some lineup changes. It's always been you and Troy, but you guys have gone through quite a bit of lineup changes. Has that ever impacted the band with songwriting or anything or dynamic?
When Rick left the band, we were no longer the same Bride. When Rick left, we knew that Rick probably was the only real rock star in the band. The rest of us were we're going through the motions, but Rick was a real rock dude. I mean, he could probably sing better than me if he wanted to. He definitely could play bass better than me.
Really? Yeah.
Rick was the real deal, you know. And
was it a shock when he left the band, or did you see it coming?
Rick had a lot of issues going on, which we masked. We put band-aids on stuff.
I gotcha.
But when we went to Europe and toured, and he said he wasn't coming back, that was a shock.
Yeah, I can imagine.
He just stayed.
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't expect that. And he actually stayed?
Yeah. He stayed. And he stayed for quite a while. He eventually came back to the States and didn't do anything worth anything at that point musically, in my opinion. But he ran his own race. You know, it was his race to run, and he ran it the way he wanted to. I have to respect him for that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I know he's passed away, and
Yeah.
You know, but to me, and I'm not trying to down any other person, but I think the core group of Bride, when I think of Bride, is you, Troy, Rick, and Jerry. I mean, because that was probably the most success that you...
It was.
That time was most successful.
And I think that, and I honestly think that Mike Loy may have played more live shows with us than Jerry did on drums. Steve Kurtzsinger, he played a boatload of shows with us and played on some albums. And then Lawrence did all of our big tours of Brazil. Basically, the big tours of Brazil was with Lawrence on bass, Lawrence Bishop.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, yeah, I mean, but, you know, there's that time, like, you know, people look back and, like, you look at Ozzy Osbourne, and a lot of people think, you know, Randy Rhodes, that's it. It's just Ozzy and Randy, you know, that's all they think of. They don't even see Zakk Wylde. But, you know, it's just whatever you're doing at that time. And people during Snakes in the Playground and like Scarecrow, we were all going through something together collectively. We didn't even know it. That's why that era impacted us so much. And then that's also why afterwards it was impossible to replicate, because nobody was on the same page after that spurt of whatever was happening. You know, you had Guardian with Bottle Rocket. You had the Newsboys had their best album out, was way, way back. You know, that Circus album they did.
I'm going blank. I know what you're talking about, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that album is a classic in any genre of, you know, rock and stuff. So you've got all these bands that some really good stuff was happening, but what you actually had was you had the church youth pastors failing everybody when it come to rock music, because somewhere along the way, and I don't know what happened, but none of us weren't relevant anymore. And all this praise and worship come in, and youth groups were forming their own praise and worship bands. And next thing you know, the places that we were playing, there was no Christian rock playing those places anymore. And it sort of happened overnight, and it dried up. And, you know, we had no places to go.
Is that when the album Drop comes along, or was that later that you felt that happened?
Probably around the Drop period, because we knew we had to start making some adjustments. But I write so raw, and my lyrics are not, I mean, some of the bands that I play with, I mean, the lyrics are really, really up front, slamming in your face Christian lyrics. But with Brad, I write a lot of imageries and stuff, you know, I try to do broad strokes and paint pictures so people can kind of insert their own life into the song and see what the song means to them with just a few lines that I give them. But yeah, I mean, something definitely happened. And so we ended up doing Drop, which I still think is one of our best albums. I mean, it had some great songs on it. And we took a little bit different direction. And at the time, man, did we take a pounding. But then since then, a lot of the people that hated us, could not stand us after that, have now apologized and said, wow, guys, should never have overlooked Drop. That's a good album. So
do you felt with those three albums before Drop, you had this momentum going, but also you kind of mentioned about things drying up and kind of happening overnight. But then Drop comes out and people, you had that momentum, but did you feel like you lost momentum because of just that the big, not really the biggest, it wasn't a huge change, but it was still, it was a change. I remember I bought it and I heard it and I was like, this is totally different.
Yeah.
This is much more laid back in a way than the last three albums.
It was way laid back. And I was writing so much stuff. That's why I started doing solo projects more often. So that's why I did the Religious Overtones. I had all this material that I wanted to get out. It's just like now I write so much material. I got 16 bands that I'm writing for now, you know? So it's, you know, now I've got the Boondogs and, you know, we're working on a third album now. My blues project. I've already recorded like 50 songs for the Boondogs that's sitting in our library to be finished. And, you know, recorded them. My vocals and everything is finished on them. But you know, I as an artist, as somebody that wants to stay busy, you know, I just write and write. And I know it's like perpetual. We have 8 albums, but only our 4th one's coming out now. So it's just sort of, you know, I don't know if I'm going too fast for my own good or if people aren't keeping up. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we could definitely mention the stuff you've been doing because you've done a lot. And but just, I was going to go back to Withdrop comes out. Was there ever thought of, and maybe we shouldn't have changed so drastically, or was there ever that thought process? Maybe we should have kept the rock, you know, the heaviness to it and done it. But I mean, obviously what's done is done now.
I don't know what sequence those albums came out. What came out after Drop? Was that This Is It?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And that got a little bit more heavier back into it.
That's my favorite album because I was really angry at that point. So that was like, yeah.
Is that the one, the Worm is on?
That's on Jesus Experience.
Okay, so I think Jesus Experience came out right after Drop.
So that would have been with John and Dino then. I don't know. I stay confused about this.
Well, you've done a lot of material. It's kind of hard to keep up
with. My discography is hard to keep up with. But yeah, This Is It was an album I come out with just basically because I was angry at the Christian market. And I just wanted to tell them, so I did.
What was it about the Christian market that you were angry about? That, or are you talking about when you say the Christian market? Are you talking about labels?
The labels,
execs, all the people that have kind of been deceitful to you that are supposed to be representing Christ, but they're out. Really, they're about the money too.
Yeah, pretty much. It just turned out to be. I just thought it was a big scam at the time, and I was like, you know, we've been scammed, guys. You know, we've done all this work with the music to promote the gospel, you know, you preach your brains out at the end of shows. You know, I mean, we were really beat down and, you know, I just sat down, wrote my heart on the paper and then we put music to it. And you can hear I was pretty angry in it, but that's okay. You can have righteous anger, you know, you can be frustrated with the system, you know. Nobody lost an eye because of the album, so we're good.
Yeah, I was looking at your discography and Drop. Then it goes Jesus Experience. Then you do Oddities, and then Fistful of Bees, and then there's This Is It. Then you do Skin for Skin.
Oh, that's why we did This Is It. I remember now. Yeah. That was an independent release. Yeah.
Okay.
Because we were in between. We were in between labels and stuff, and I'll set you up for your next bunch of questions too.
Okay.
I wanted to get out of the record deal with Dez because that's who we had did. What did we do with him? We did Fistful of Bees with Dez Dickerson.
Was that the Absolute Records?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there was nothing wrong with it other than Dez took on more than he could handle.
Okay.
And he had our albums and we had booked shows around the album and actually had to get the albums from him in order to take them out to sell them on the tour that we were trying to promote. But I remember Dez, I said, I need to get out of this record deal. It's not any good. He said, I can't let you out of it. It's a deal. You know, you have to do some more albums and stuff to make it complete. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what if I told you that my personal beliefs have changed and I am a Christian universalist? He said, I'll send you a contract to get out of the deal tonight.
Really?
It was that quick. And then I knew.
How'd you come up with that? Was it true or were you just saying it to?
No, it was absolutely true. I've been a Christian universalist now for 35, 40 years.
What does that term mean? I've heard it, but I really don't know what that term would mean to define someone.
It doesn't have anything to do with being a Unitarian. It is a Christian universalist is someone that believes that God wins, the devil loses, and that God was in Christ reconciling the world unto himself, not imputing sins. And it basically lifts God up to the status that what he intended to do, he did. There was no plan B. There was no disruption of the devil sticking his foot in and screwing up God's plan. That would be impossible. It's not like God did not have complete oversight over creation, because he did. There was a lamb slain before the foundation of the world. And that was for one thing, and that was for the restoration of all things at the end times, when everything comes into its fullness. It doesn't mean that I don't believe in certain things or that I do believe in certain things. It's not a theology as it is a lifestyle that you live, and that it's about forgiveness, about love, about reconciliation, about the grace of God, the mercy of God, rightly dividing the truth when it comes to judgment and to punishments and things of that sort, putting the Bible into the perspective of looking at it as God had intended it, showing his nature, his character, his personality, not adding to it our human desire to see, you know, people executed or see people thrown into hell or things like that because of horrible things they do. It's seeing God as victorious in that he can take the most mired individual ever. And I'll use Hitler as an example, mm-hmm. because everybody always asks me, what about Hitler? I don't know. What about Hitler? You know,
are you saying whether he's in hell?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And I don't see that Jesus lost any. I don't think that Jesus lost any. I believe there was 100 sheep total. One went astray. He went and got it. And he brought it back. And he does that for every one of them that goes astray and comes back. And he said, Father, you've given me everything. You've given me all this. Everything that there is, you've given to me. And that's what Jesus said. He claimed it. And I do believe that if if we lose any, it can't be because of the I think the blood did what it was intended to do, in that, you know, and that it's got that sort of power, and it brings us to God, you know, it gives us life.
So I guess the big thing that you believe is through that is that everyone goes to heaven and no one goes to hell. Is that what you?
No, not necessarily. Okay. I believe in the reconciliation of all things. And I do believe that God is our reward. Heaven's not our reward, and hell's not the end of anything. David said, if I made my bed in hell, you're there, you know, which definitely means that no matter where you're at, God is at. Where God is at, there's love, because God is love. God is hope. There's hope for everyone. And you can't say that, all right, say we've been around for a billion years, which I don't think we have, but say we have, since the scientists pretend mm-hmm. we have.
Yeah.
And here's your little life. That's it.
Yeah. It's not nothing.
You're going to be judged eternally because of that. It's like, it's something we're missing here. I don't know exactly. I don't know what it is, but it doesn't make sense to me. And any parent, it doesn't matter what your kid does. If you have children, I've got three boys. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I mean, some of my boys, they've done things they shouldn't have done, just like I have. But in no way, shape, or form, if that house is burning down and they're in there, I'm going in to get them with all of my power. Yeah, I'm not going to say, well, you know, they're going to cause me grief later on. They're going to cause me grief and cause other people grief. Yeah, just let them burn. Man, I mean, that's not in God's plan, you know.
I understand what you're saying. Because it is hard to fathom a lot of things about the Bible, really, to be honest with you. And none of us truly will ever know the truth, I guess, until we actually pass away of what's going to happen. But, I mean, my personal opinion or thought would be like talking about God and love, and it's hard to fathom the thought of, well, you didn't accept Christ, and now for eternity you have to burn in hell and suffer. And you know, there's so many, you know, thoughts that I have about it, and I see where you're coming from. It's nothing. I'd be like, well, if it were up to me and I was the creator, I would say all my creation, everyone that's ever lived doesn't have to suffer for eternity because of, you know, whatever the I get what you're saying. And
it's that paying that last farthing is what
it's like,
boils
you know,
down
just
to.
Because, you know, you look at a person, they lived a good life and they're like, well, I lived a good life. So, but they never accepted Christ, you know, into their heart. And now because of that, are they going to be burning in hell for the rest of their life? It's hard to fathom. It is hard to fathom. And I mean, people may jumble me for saying that, but I don't know. I really don't know. Well, I would like to say that not everyone is going to be suffering like that. It's hard to think about.
Well, when I see that all nations are come in the Bible, it talks about all nations coming to God there. And it talks about every knee will bow and every tongue will confess. Those aren't forced confessions. And people said, oh, well, you think there's salvation after this life? No, I don't think there's salvation after this life. I don't think that salvation at all has anything to do with you or I. It has to do with one man, and his name was Jesus. Mm-hmm. As in Adam, all died. As in Christ, all are made alive. What he did on that cross was not an individual act. He died as me, as you, as this guy, as this. He really took the brunt of it. He died for every individual that has ever existed, because he was that same lamb that was slain before the foundations of the world, wherever that was in God's mind, wherever it was. And now he is on physical display right here for every eye to see, you know. And I look at, you know, when people talk about hell and flames and fire and stuff, you know, there was in the Old Testament, they were sacrificing babies to Molech and stuff, you know. And God said, that has never entered my mind nor entered my heart to burn people with fire. You can look it up. It actually says that in Isaiah and Jeremiah. Never entered his mind or a heart to do such a thing with fire, ever. So when I look at fire, I look at fire like a purifier. You take raw gold out of the earth and you take it and you melt it. You melt it with fervent heat. You turn up the oven and melt that gold. And the gold drops to the bottom and the dross comes to the top. You dip the dross off and what you've got is pure gold. And the potter and the clay, I mean, God is the one that mars us. God's the one that builds us back up. He takes full responsibility for everything. Mm-hmm. You know, he dug the ditch. He's responsible if our mule falls in the ditch. God dug the ditch. He says he did. He subjected everybody to this in order that he could bring everybody back. That's the unfathomable thing about the Lord, is we don't see the big picture. We're only seeing what we see each day. And some people are so indoctrinated with their churches or enamored with a certain preacher, they don't do their own thinking anymore. They can't think outside that denominational box. And I've done away with denominations years ago.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, there's not going to be a denominational section in heaven to split everything up, right?
I wish I could remember that joke about that. There's a really good joke, but I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Well, I was going to ask you though. So does, when you look back at your old lyrics, do you feel differently about certain lyrics you've written? I mean, when you say fire, I think of fire and brimstone, or heaven and hell. You know, there's a place called heaven and hell. You sung about. Do you still feel the same about your lyrics that you wrote back then, or do you feel differently?
Yeah, I mean, it was where I was at the time. So, you know, it's just where I was at, you know, in my journey, in my walk. And, you know, I'm a completely different person now than I was back in those days anyway. I mean, I've gone through a lot in my life, you know, tragedies and heartaches and hardships and all sorts of things. You know, times that, you know, when I moved to New Zealand, I thought my career was completely over. Yeah. I didn't come here with any intention on recording, but I've recorded more songs since I've been in New Zealand than I did the rest of my career combined. So, you know, I didn't know I could paint. I've taken up painting. I paint acrylic.
You're writing stories too?
Yeah, I've got 200 short stories that I've written that are being read on an international podcast. Matter of fact, this weekend they're going to read four more stories that I wrote. Okay. So, you know, I thought my career as being creative or whatever was done. I was just willing just to lay low. But, you know, Alan Zaring, he sent me a song and he said, "What do you think of this song?" I said, "That's a good song." He said, you want to record it? I'm like, I don't have anything recorded on. So Alan's like, what if I send you a recording gear? I said, okay. So that's what got me started again was The World Will Burn. He sent me the recording gear and we did our first The World Will Burn album. And that launched whatever I'm doing now, you know, whatever it is, you know, good or bad.
Is your wife out? Is she from New Zealand? Is that what brought you out there or got you out there?
Yeah, we've been married be 9 years in April the 4th. I moved here about 9 years ago. Met my wife online. It was one, who knows when it was. Anyway, I think it's 2013, maybe. Oh, 2000. I can't remember. It was New Year's Eve, and I was up late, you know, and just looking on the internet, answering mail and stuff, you know, and seen her picture there. And we used to have this thing you could poke people. And I would poke people just to have people come over and look at my Facebook. So I poked her. She pokes me back. And, that's nice. So we started kind of chatting back and forth. And the next thing you know, I mean, we were like, hey, you want to Skype? And she's like, yeah. So we actually Skype dated for about 9 months, I think. And then I came to visit for a couple of weeks in New Zealand. And I left. She thought, well, that's it. You know, that's won't see him again, I guess, you know. And I went back and I sold my house and I sold my cars and found homes for my dogs and moved here.
Wow. What did your family think about that when you did that? Like, I mean, your son, Troy, all the living out there.
It's a weird thing because, you know, my parents are alive and well. And of course, Troy, I got three boys. I got 6-7 grandkids. Can't keep count. I think they wanted what was best for me. You know, they knew that at a certain point I was going through some mental problems there, just trying to adjust to a new life that I had. After divorce, you know, you have to make some adjustments. And I was living alone, and I don't think I was well living alone.
It's depressing. It is very depressing living alone, to be honest with you. After being in a relationship.
I like that I could come and go as I please, but I wasn't going anywhere. I would just go to work and come home and pretty much all I had after that was a chair and a TV and a refrigerator and you know, and I watched my Turner Classic Movies, which is my favorite, and I'd have me a TV dinner or some pizza rolls or something and go back to work and do it again all next day.
Were you working at the courthouse or something like that at that time? Or were you doing like a bailiff kind of thing?
I worked for the sheriff's office for a while there, transporting and working the courts. And then I become an EMT. And then I rode ambulance, you know, drove ambulances and stuff and did technical work there. And then... let's see. I don't know what came first. I ended up at Brown Foreman Cooperage as security, which they make the whiskey barrels for Jack Daniels and stuff. Okay. So I ended up there doing security there. And then that's when, you know, it was so funny because I told all those guys, because they all knew I played music. I would give my CDs away to them and stuff, you know, at the Cooperage. So, and I kept telling them, you're not leaving. I tell them, is this my last day? Yeah, we'll see you on Monday. I said, no, you won't, dude. I'm going to be on a plane. Right. And that was it.
Do you, out there, you're going almost blind out there in a way. I mean, you have her out there, but was it easy to set up or did she help you out? Or, you know, do you go straight to work or, I mean, what are you having to do? I mean, it's such a new place.
I come here with no opportunities, no diplomas, no university degrees or anything. And I was here for 2 months. In order for me to do all that, it did cost a little bit of money. You had to do these physicals and stuff to actually move here as permanent resident. I had to come on a work visa to begin with. And then you apply for your residency, then you apply for your permanent residency, and all of it takes money and time. Mm-hmm. You have to pass your physicals and things. They don't want to take sick people on. And But about 2 months, I got a job at a place called Massport, which drove forklifts for they do the one of the bigger lawnmower and barbecue places. So I was loading containers. And then fortunately, I didn't have to do that too long, a couple of years, I think, because that was very hard labor. And then I got hired on at Airbus helicopters, where I've been at now for 7 years.
Okay.
So,
So you still do that in the meantime with, all the projects you got going on. And one of the, I don't want to keep you much longer. I know you need to get going here. Of course, I wanted to mention the whole social media, Facebook thing. I know because of what we talked about earlier, a lot of people like to argue. It's funny that so many Christians want to constantly bicker among each other and tear each other down, instead of just being a responsive, open, responsive, or just willing to say, okay, let me hear you out, instead of let me tear you down once you say what you're going to say. But and then there's obviously people that support you too and are encouraging. But how's your outlook kind of been on Facebook? And I know you kind of got into with a lady here recently too, about stuff, but.
yeah, she blindsided me out of nowhere. And I look back, I had no communications with her prior to that. She just attacked me out of the blue. It was the most bizarre thing. Even questioned my Christianity and if I was saved or not, whatever that means to her. I don't know what it means to
Yeah.
her. But
Well,
she
a
didn't
lot of
want to
people do
talk.
that.
She wanted to get her point across.
What's your thoughts on, I guess, social media and how things are going and how it's being used? I mean, good or bad, I guess.
I think if you go on to social media looking for a fight, there's plenty of people to fight you. The
Oh,
same
true.
people wouldn't fight you in the street.
No, computer
And
warriors.
yeah, though they're tough computer. They're all Rockies on the, I used to challenge people. I'd give them my home address years ago
Yeah.
when I was much
Really?
more keen for that. Yeah.
Pass
Nobody
on
took me up on it.
that.
Yeah. Nobody took me up. But and that was the wrong thing to do. Let me just say that. But I think for me, I mean, social media has propelled my career and what I do. It has launched me in a lot of different areas. I no longer really debate. What I try to do is, if somebody has a legitimate question and I answer it, I know if they've read what I've sent them or not because of the amount of time they respond back to me. So if I send them something, say that's 4 or 5 paragraphs, because if they really want to know, they'll read it. So if I send them something 4 or 5 paragraphs and 2 seconds later they shoot something back at me,
Yeah, they
I
didn't
know they're
read it.
not reading it. So the conversation's over at that point. Because I mean, you have to realize I've done this for so long now, defending my position, which I shouldn't have to, but defending my position on several topics, whether I'm a conservative, whether I'm a universalist, whether I'm this, that, or whatever. I can read people pretty well now and know you've just come looking for a fight or to belittle me or to troll me or to get your point across on my page so you get your 15 minutes of fame to the 10 people that actually read my post for whatever reason. My life is not what people think it is, and I'm not the person that people think I am because they don't hang with me. I have lots of friends here. I have no enemies. The only enemies I have are people that never met me, and they're the ones that don't like me because they have a predisposition.
What do you
They
think that
think
they think about you, or that's not true, would you
I think
say?
they think that I am an arrogant know-it-all is what I
Okay.
think, and that's hardly the case. I'll tell you plenty of things. You can ask me certain Bible questions. I'll say, I don't have a clue. Let's look it up, Google it, see if
Yeah.
somebody's got something to say about it. As far as my vocals go, I know I'm a good vocalist. I'd be stupid not to say that I'm not. But I'm not going around telling everybody I'm the greatest, and people do believe that I think that because they've accused
Yeah.
me of that. And
I've
it's
never thought
not,
that you thought that, but yeah.
yeah. Well, because you're one of the guys that have an open mind, and you read what you read the intent and not what you can make of it. You know, you could take anything. I could post anything on there, honestly, and somebody will have an argument against it.
Exactly.
Even if it's just a scripture, I'll post a nice scripture, right?
Uh-huh.
The gospel means good news. And somebody will post afterwards, yet it says the unbelieving, the blah, the blah, blah, blah.
Right. It's like, yeah. They just like, got to rip it up and tear it apart. Like,
really? Did you mean that? I mean, did you really have to do that? It makes no sense to me. I mean,
that's the problem with social media is that everyone has a voice. Even the crazy people have a voice. And what's unfortunately, you can have nine people tell you the greatest thing in the world and you get that 10th person that says something stupid or negative, and that's what you think about and focus on, and it bothers you.
I would do that at live shows too. I explained to my wife, because my wife has never seen me on stage except on video. I said I would be playing show and be, you know, 500 people having a grand time. And I'd see one person out there that looked bored, and the whole night I'm playing to that one person instead of enjoying the vibe I'm getting from the 499 people.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get that one person to smile or acknowledge that they're actually at a good show.
And it's a shame that we do that, though, too.
It's because you're trying to make yourself, you're trying to validate what you do or make yourself relative. I don't know what it is. It's in all of us. You know, we all want to be accepted for something.
Yeah. Not everyone's going to accept
you
for whatever reason. So,
I mean, and I've had to learn the hard way. I'm just thankful that, you know, I've lasted this long. It's crazy. I mean, this weekend, you know, I'll record at least three songs. I'm going to record directly after we get finished here. And probably one more, and then tomorrow I'll record another one. So, I mean, every weekend practically I'm recording. So I'm just thankful that God continues to use me. And I hope that the styles that I'm doing and stuff are diverse enough that that I'm not wearing out my welcome. But, you know, I know I'm everywhere, and I've got an album that comes out every month. But people can choose to buy it or not. They don't have to say.
Yeah, that's true. They don't have
too much. Yeah. I don't want to compete with Brad with some of my other projects.
Of course, I want you to mention we'll talk about real quick before we wrap it up. The Bride has a new album coming out. With so many projects, and kind of like what you just said, you have so many projects out there, you don't want to say, well, what's going to be special about Bride? He's got all these other projects he's doing too. What would you tell people with that attitude or maybe that thought?
Bride is an iconic band because we were around in the beginning days. None of the other bands that I have sound anything like Bride, and they'll definitely hear it on the new Bride album, which should be out relatively soon. I know I keep promising it, but it's out of my hands now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, there's some promotional stuff going down first and stuff to get more momentum. I don't know. I think that Bride stands out because Troy and I know each other. We read each other. You know, not everything I sing is gold to Troy, so he'll tell me. Whereas some of the other people I play or sing for, they don't say anything. They just let me do my own thing, and it's not always the best, you know. I mean, sometimes you got to go back and rethink stuff. And I always tell people, if you want me to do that different, let me know. But nobody ever does, and I can look back and see, you know, just didn't have the melody on that song I should have had. I wish they'd have said something now before it was released. But you know, you can't really judge yourself the way other people can. So it would be good for me to have a producer. Somebody that would say, you know, you've got a better melody in you, you know, that type of thing. But I don't. So that's why it's kind of like I hear something in my head, I sing it, and I move on.
When do you expect the album to be out?
I don't have a clue. I thought it was coming out in February. I believe there's going to be a promotional EP that comes out first.
Okay.
With
two
songs from... Yeah.
Scott Waters was on recently and mentioned that, I believe.
Yeah. Scott would know better than I would. So,
okay.
I'll be the last to know. Matter of fact, I'll be getting emails from people saying, hey, I got the new Bride album, and I won't even know
it's like out. You don't have it. Would this kind of fall along the style of the most recent album you guys did? or would it be a little bit different, or how would you classify
it? I think it's got a lot more hooks, and I think Troy just really outdid himself guitar wise again. I think that he's really locked into some really cool stuff that he's doing, and he really drives it home on this new album.
Who performs on this album with you guys?
It's of course Troy and myself. Then Greg Campbell plays about half the bass parts. He's the guy that plays on my Boondogs albums.
Okay.
Matter of fact, he's putting together my Boondog album now. And he played on about half of it, but he ran out of time. So Neil, who does the producing, who's played some guitar on it, who is in No Other God, NLG, he mixed it, done it, and he played some bass on it as well. And then Alexander Apostin, the drummer, he's played on the last three Bride albums.
Okay.
Drums. So he's a very world-class drummer. You know, he's one of those guys that probably does as many seminars a year as he plays live shows.
Oh, really?
So he's quite a big drummer in Brazil.
Would you say, will Bride ever play a live show again, do you think?
No.
Really? Is that just because of you don't want to, or the location, or any other reason?
I have a lot of physical things going on that I can't travel too well.
Okay.
And it's probably not going to get better. It's going to get worse over the next couple of years. And by then, nobody's going to see me on stage anyway. So it's.
Well, I hate to hear that.
I'm dealing with a lot of health issues right now. Mm-hmm. So it's just getting through those one object at a time. It's what it is. You just deal with it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry to hear that. And obviously, I hope people will pray for you. And, you know, unfortunately, getting older is not like you're getting younger and getting healthier and better, and back start to hurt and surgeries and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So I kind of look at it like, you know, if we could do a reality show, it would be like the same type of thing that you're seeing that Ozzy did with his show. That right. would be me.
Okay.
It's like, what's Dale doing now? I don't know. He's outside in his underwear again. Bring him in, will you? It's
like looking at the fridge for no reason.
Yeah.
And anything else currently coming up that people can check out that you got going on?
Yeah, The Reconciled. Man, that's a monster album. We've got our sophomore album.
Todd is just, he's a great songwriter. He's a great performer and everything, man. I thought you guys nailed it with that album.
Well, he had these other songs that he presented to another singer, and the other singer said he just couldn't hear anything to do on them. Mm. But when I heard it, I instantly was like, oh yeah, let's run with it. So he started feeding me the songs, you know, and I was just boom, 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 just kept popping them back to him. So I think he's mixing it now. So the new
record's on.
Yeah. So it's nice. And if people would have given it a chance, it would have been in everybody's top 10, because it's one of my favorite albums.
Yeah.
Doing an album with Steve Kurtzinger. The name of the project is Digital Kill, KLL. And that is a monster heavy album, but it has a lot of ambient stuff in it as well. It's 14 songs, I think. And it's just brutal. And he, of course, was Bride's bass player back in the day. And we were signed for a day, but it fell through. So now I think he's just going to put it out there on the streaming mediums and stuff, you know, wherever you download stuff. And he may do a limited run CDs, but it's really something once it comes out. He's going to release a song soon, so everybody will be able to hear a song. And other than that, I'm trying to think, you know, the new Swingle & Thompson Ordained is out. That's When Two Worlds Collide. That's with Randy Swingle. Slowly working on The World Will Burn. Slowly maybe going to do a full album with Garrett Thomas again for the Thomas Thompson Earth Project. We have two songs in the bag, or we'll have after probably today. Mm-hmm. I'm just not rushing things now, you know.
Do you want to keep performing as long as you can vocally like this?
as long as it makes me money, I'll keep doing it, because now it's true. Now it's like, you know, I mean, time is money. If I'm not if I'm not here, I can be writing and making money. It's not all about money, but nobody wants, you know, to put forth tons of effort for nothing. You know, it's, you know, even missionaries make money. So,
Well, I appreciate you joining. I mean, there's so many things I wish I could talk to you about, but I also know that you've got a busy schedule, and you're more than welcome to come back on the show if you ever want to and talk more. If there's anywhere you want direct people to go to purchase or hook up with you, if you want to tell that, but also if there's, I always let my guests have the last word. So if there's anything you want to say to people listening that might, you know, might be fans, or just anything you might want to put out there also, you know, I'll let you have the last word.
Well, I think that the one thing, if anybody has anything to say to me or about me or wishing to discuss anything, you know, instead of taking the social media and trying to get a fire started, just send me a note. I mean, I'm easy to get a hold of. I mean, Facebook is out there. It's Dale Thompson Vocalist, I think is what it is, on Facebook. But, you know, my faith in God has never wavered. It's never waned. It's never been depleted. Faith in myself has. So God has to get me built back up from time to time, like we all do. We all are living in a strange world now. It's much stranger than I ever thought it would go to and experience. And I just, you know, I just think that there's only one hope, and that is Jesus Christ. And whether or not you believe the way that I do or not, it does not matter, as long as you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and that he died on the cross, he died for your sins, he was buried, he was resurrected. And, you know, he sits at the right hand of God the Father. And that's the main gist. You know, we work from the foundation up. You can't build from the roof down. So, you know, if your foundation is Christ, everything else will come into play. And, you know, maybe we don't agree on everything, but, you know, you're in one place and I'm in the other, and I got different parents than you, and, you know, I've worked different jobs than you, I've seen different parts of the world than you. So, you know, we're shaped and fashioned by our culture, by our traditions, you know, by our upbringings and stuff. So yeah, I mean, one common thread that I should have with every Christian is Jesus. And if somebody has a problem with that, it's, you know, it's your problem, it ain't my problem. So I'm willing, more than ready to fellowship at any time with you know, the folks that are connected to Christ, who know their true identity in Christ, and also to those that don't believe. I have a lot of unbelievers that listen to Bride. You know, I'm glad you dig the music, even if you don't believe, you know. And don't worry, I'm still praying for you anyway, so you'll be all right. That's, you know, even if you don't believe, I promise you, my prayers will get you through it, man. Will point you in the right direction. So I mean, to the believers and unbelievers, you know, I'm just a regular guy, just like anybody else is. I'm nothing special. I just have faith in God.